Greetings, wonderful people. Get ready to be shaken up, woken up, inspired, informed by today's guest, a woman who's never shy of airing a strong opinion or bringing forth a sharp insight. But before we get started, can I give you a quick reminder to check out my patreon.com site? By signing up there, you show real practical financial support for everything that we do on this channel. Costs about the price of a cup of coffee every month. But in return, you get early access to all my new content and you get exclusive access to a question and answer session every week. It's great. Come along, join us, make it better by being there. Okay, now it's time for this week's interview. Hi everyone, fellow time travellers. It's that time in the week when we seek to broaden our horizons, widen our perspectives by hearing from another voice. Another opinionated voice, ideally. This week's guest, I think, is certainly opinionated. Candace Owens, usually described whenever I look online as a political commentator, sometimes called a political pundit. Like me, routinely described as far-right, far-right being one of a swathe of descriptions that's been rendered meaningless, really, in modern times by misuse and overuse. I see Candace as fascinating. Forthright, intensely smart, wonderfully articulate, fearless, determined, and I've been looking forward to this conversation for, days now. So let's get into it. Good morning to you, Candace Owens.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited that we were able to make this work.
Indeed, indeed. I want to get straight into it. I want to make the most of our time together, Candace. And I really want to start. I watch you online, and I've been watching the latest conversations that you've been having with a variety of figures. And it seems to me 4 years since the COVID debacle kicked off, and it was the COVID debacle that kind of woke me up to so many other issues. It seems, against all my expectations, that even now the world is getting madder and madder, faster and faster. I wondered if you feel as if whatever ride we're on is spinning ever more out of control.
I agree. I actually, though, am optimistic about it because I think that the reason it feels more feverish is because for a very long time, there was sort of this authority that everybody trusted. And therefore, it seemed ordered because nobody was awake. Like you said, after COVID, I sort of woke up to this and started to realize maybe some things that I thought were not. And because of that, because the establishment, so to speak, feels threatened, because they should feel threatened, people are no longer believing them, they are kind of feverishly writing. They're in a total fever pitch right now, trying to figure out how to kind of get the sheep back in order.
Is the COVID, well, I always call it the COVID debacle, was that for you also? Because that, I've loudly admitted over recent times when challenged that I was naive. I was not paying attention for the first five decades of my life. And it was only what started to happen around COVID that, for whatever reason, made that kind of fight, flight, reptilian bit of my brain flicker for the first time. So was it the same for you?
So first, what I'll say is that what you just said is something that the majority of the mainstream media is incapable of doing. And that's what I mean about they're so authoritarian. They refuse to admit when they've just got it wrong. And the people that are willing to, with new information, update, change their minds are people that should have platforms. And you're starting to see that they do have platforms because they've built real trust with the people, the trust to just say, wow, I was completely wrong about this. But no, regarding COVID, I was already on a list because I was an anti-vaxxer. I am an anti-vaxxer. I love that there's always a name for something. I was blessed when I was 20 that I got vaccine injured by the Gardasil shot. And it took me out of a reverie with medical, like big pharma, because I basically had a mini seizure while I was at the doctor and then got up. I was about 19 or 20 and went, I don't know anything about this shot. I blindly trusted the doctor. And then when I researched just that particular shot, I realized it was all smoke and mirrors. Everything that I was told to be, it was like a fear-based, get it or you're going to get cervical or ovarian cancer from HPV, which can be a total total nonsense. And so when my husband and I got married and had kids, I had already made up my mind to do a series on vaccines for parents so that they could just hear a different opinion. And so I had already was producing that series. And then luckily for me, COVID hit and suddenly people were going, what's going on with Big Pharma? And I, of course, was saying, don't get the shot from the very beginning. And I think that, you know, people were finally ready to hear. It's hard to imagine in your mind that the establishment could be that evil. And I think that's what's so difficult. We're naturally trusting because the other option is to believe that the entire mainstream media apparatus, in collusion with governments worldwide, in collusion with vaccine makers, in collusion with the government organizations, for us, it's the FDA, are all colluding, for you guys, the NIH, are all colluding to lie to people. Like, you'd have to actually be a madman to think that first. And I got to think that first because I got vaccine injured when I was younger and survived it. So I had arrived at that conclusion.
It's what's been so devastating for me, and I don't use the word lightly or casually, is the trust issue. I trusted the establishment. I feel ridiculous saying it, even although I've said it many times now. It still makes me blush, metaphorically at least, whenever I hear myself saying it. But I just assumed that whether they were red or blue, whether they were left or right, that the establishment, the government of the day, was basically had mine and my family's interests at heart. Yeah. They would have ideological differences about politics and society and all of the rest of it. But basically, they would keep the lights on. They would come and empty the refuse. There would be schools. There'd be hospitals. There'd be food in the shops. And that they basically wanted me and mine to be well. And the realization that I came to over a very painful, almost a period, almost like grieving, that actually, on the contrary, at best, they didn't care if I lived or died. And at worst, there might actually be something malevolent at play. That's what's made me so angry because, you know, it's like being betrayed by a lifelong monogamous spouse. You know, I feel as if I just feel so foolish that I placed that trust. We got our kids. My kids are now 21, 18 and 16. And at the time when they were little, we got them all the MMR vaccinations, you know, the measles, mumps and rubella. And we, you know, we did it for all three, as you know, they were born about each, you know, 2 years apart. And we marched these little bodies into the doctor's surgery, and we got those vaccinations. And now I look back on it and I think, well, we just weren't. We were just so blithely naive. We didn't take the COVID products. We managed to keep my kids away from the COVID products as well. And it's the thing that we achieved as parents that I think we're probably happiest about in all of it, in all of the years. The fact that we kept those needles away from their arms at that point has come down as a great accomplishment. But you know what I mean? It's that feeling of it's awakening to the loss of trust is devastating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is devastating. And beyond that, you go through this period of cognitive dissonance where you start wondering, like, am I crazy? Like, how could this possibly be my entire life? I believed this. I did this. How could I have been so wrong? And that's what you're describing as, like, it still makes me blush to look back on your former self and to realize that I had trust in the establishment. But I always tell people, like I said, you'd have to have been crazy not to have trust in them, considering they have created, and I hate to overuse this term, but it is in fact a matrix of sorts. They're controlling the textbooks, right? Most people go to public school. The information that they're getting is telling you that it is actually a token of your education to read the New York Times and to register that as the reality of everything that's happening in the world. You know, you guys probably have a different, you know, trusted newspaper, maybe the Times of London. They're telling you that it's a token of your education to vaccinate your children. Like, thank goodness you're not just like a poor child in Africa and we get to have this remarkably educated society where we get to vax our children and we can go to the doctor. And so everything from the moment that you are handing your children over to the government is to plug them into this matrix unquestioningly. It is the enslavement of the mind, and they've accomplished it, and it is evil. But the thing is they went too far. they just went too far. And inevitably, that's what happens. You know, lies eventually collapse under their own weight. And we're at that moment. And that's what keeps me so optimistic.
I agree up to a point, Candace, but I thought when I mentioned the 4-year time span, because in recent weeks, the fact that we're 4 years in has really begun to prey on my mind, because I struggle with the fact that so much has been revealed now in the past few years about the damage done by lockdown, about the damage done by the medical interventions, you know, about the meaninglessness of masks and magic arrows on shop floors and keep 6 feet apart and all of that. Then there's, you know, you get into the nature of the proxy war in Ukraine. You get into the nature of what's happening in Gaza. So much is out there in plain sight, almost being admitted to, and yet it doesn't seem to matter. You know, the corruption of the Biden family, you know, the millions that were accrued by selling access to Joe Biden as vice president to Obama. It gets out there. The truth is out there. And we were supposed to believe that the truth is a lion that only needs to be set free and it'll take care of itself. But it doesn't seem to be bringing down any of the culprits.
You know, in terms of the people that have imparted the evil, no, you're correct, because they have a tremendous amount of power and they're never going to penalize themselves. But like I said, when you're speaking about the rift right now that you feel, and that is a rift between the people that are governing over us and the people that are being governed. People are waking up, and that is a problem for them. Is it going to be overnight? No, but it's happening slowly. I think it's happening quite quickly. And if you just examine, for example, in America, these mainstream media sources are just not watched or listened to anymore. People are pursuing independent voices for a reason. And so it may not feel like the shift is radical enough because you're still perceiving what the mainstream media is saying. And there is also a contingent of the population which still listens to them. But even to those individuals, I have compassion for them. I get it, right? Imagine you are a person who has based your entire life and your entire identity within this matrix. Let's say you are a doctor.
I am one of those people.
Yeah, but even further, like, you are a psychologist, you are a nurse, you are like everything you've ever done, and you're 55 years old, 65 years old, whatever it is. Are you really going to want to undo all of that? That means to undo yourself in many ways. And most people either don't have the humility or do not have the emotional expanse. They don't want to go through that trauma. And so they'd rather stay within a system of abuse. They really would rather stay within the system of abuse because it makes sense to them. And this gets into, by the way, we can talk about the philosophers of old. We're talking about the concept of slavery, whether it's natural, Plato, Augustine, they were grappling with this concept. We don't know if the answer is, like, some people do find it easier to just be ruled over. It's easier to not have to think and to just do whatever you're told.
Yes, I have come to realize that it would appear that freedom is an onerous responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a burden. It's not a burden. It's a weight to carry. It's a responsibility. And when you invite people to contemplate a notion like inalienable, I only really started pondering the notion of inalienable rights relatively recently. In that they're given to you by, well, God. They're not given to you by a human being. Therefore, they can't be taken away from you by a human being. But the point is, in being inalienable, even if you want to, you can't give it up. I find that profoundly moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when your freedom is threatened, actually. It's when someone comes to you and says, I want your freedom. I want to enslave you. Even if you want to, even if it would be easier for you to go along with that, you can't, because of the nature of the right of the freedom being inalienable. It's at mm-hmm. that moment that you have to say, I'm going to have to fight to the death on this, because
right.
I cannot lose this freedom but with my life. You're going to have to rip it out of me like my beating heart. The option to be a slave is not actually your gift to grant. You have to be free. And I find that profoundly moving.
It is. And so I think there are so many people that are similarly grappling with that concept. And some people are demanding more restrictions because they don't want to confront that. They like the idea of everybody stay at home and turn on your TV screens and listen to what they're telling you to do. Don't, you know, let your grandmother die alone. They actually want society to become more restricted because they're not capable of confronting their own inalienable rights. And I truly believe that it is a form of at times laziness and at times cowardice. And for me, I've never struggled with either of those things. I always feel relieved to recognize something that I've gotten wrong, because then I go, now I can correct this. And that allows me to be more free. Like, I am now more free because I know this, and it's going to be good for my kids to inherit this true freedom, because the only true freedom that exists is the freedom of the mind.
When you had your awakening, as you know, in the aftermath of the seizure that you described in your teens, and you began that process of thinking, well, if I've been misled about these medical interventions, what else is adrift here? What were some of the next steps that you made so that you were now suspicious about Big Pharma? What else did you begin to look at and think, wait a minute, if that's wrong, what about this over here?
So it's funny, because at the time I would say that I always describe it as like a sleepy liberal, like sleepy left-leaning, as in I was in university. Most people believe they're left-leaning. Your mind is being poisoned every single day. And I didn't correlate it to politics at all. It was just, for me, I was never going to get another vaccine in my life. That was kind of my mind that I had made up. And I knew that someday when I had children, my children were not going to be vaccinated. And I knew that would be a tough sell to whoever I married, and trying to explain why I was so passionate about it. But I didn't get to the next step. And I suppose what it did was that it planted a seed that big lies are plausible. And I didn't get to the next step until Black Lives Matter and Donald Trump. And I was, again, on the left, but I was sort of very shocked when Donald Trump said, I'm running for president of the United States. And I said, oh no, this guy can't be president. Come on. He's on the TV show. He's a character. Obama is able to communicate. He's one of the greatest orators of our time. No way we're going from Obama to this guy. Like, did not want Donald Trump to get elected. And then I was quite surprised, because that wasn't enough. Like, the mainstream media went so extreme in trying to convince me that he was Adolf Hitler, and that my like duty as a Black person was to vote. Otherwise I was going to be back on a slave ship. It was bonkers. Their rhetoric was insane. And I found that to be laughable, because he was in the public sphere for decades and no one said this at all. I'm like, when he decided to run for president, you realized, oh my God, no, actually he's Adolf Hitler and he wants to enslave Black Americans. And so it was too quick of a shift. And I just went, okay, that's weird. I'm going to listen to this guy speak and see why the media, who I love and trust still, are getting, you know, so crazy about him. And I listened to one of his speeches, and he gave a very sound, I thought, elevator pitch to Black America. Like, he just started rattling off statistics and the ways that we were suffering in our communities. All of them were true, and said, look, you've given your vote to Democrats for X amount of years. I'm just saying, why don't you just try something new with me? Just try something different. And then I watched the media take him completely out of context, and the fake tears, you know, black journalists. He looked Black America in the face and told us that we were poor. And I just went, whoa. And so that really was the earth shattering moment for me, because that was when I went through that cognitive dissonance of like, is it plausible that everything I thought was true is not? Like, this is the upside down moment, because I thought the left and the Democrats were the good guys fighting for rights. And I then had to confront the idea that all of those people that I had dismissed as like backwards and racist and rednecks and, you know, wish that Black Americans were still enslaved may have been lied about. And that was hard. Like, that was actually hard. And the only way that I could get through that was through true education, meaning I started buying books from people that I had dismissed in my head as race traitors. And the person who completely changed me was Thomas Sowell. I started reading Thomas Sowell's books, and there was no coming back from that.
I was made aware of Thomas Sowell, I don't know, before COVID, he had started cropping up for whatever reason, and I started reading him, and likewise, that was a great awakening for me. That was a sense in which I was made to confront the possibility that a large part of the civil rights, whatever, Black Lives Matter, the Democrat Party, the party of the people, that it was upside down. What Thomas Sowell was saying, I thought, can that be true? Because this guy certainly looks and sounds credible. I'm gonna have difficulty thinking that this guy is not qualified to say these things. How do you assess then? Fast forward to now, Trump and Kennedy Jr. What's your reading of that apparent unity of intent?
In regards to what? Like, do I think they're good pairing?
Do you buy it? Does it seem authentic to you, or does it seem like a play?
I don't think it's a play. I think both of them, first and foremost, if you're running and you're Trump and you know that actually a large contingent of your voter base was keen on RFK Jr., I would say definitely like suburban moms were keen on RFK Jr. because they preferred his demeanor, preferred his rhetoric. I mean, even conservative women, you will still have that contingent who are just like, I just don't like the way Trump speaks. And they liked RFK Jr. And so I think it was, look, I'm going to back up Trump because this is from RFK Jr.'s perspective. I truly believe that what the left wants to implement is evil. And so if I have to back someone, and also they treated him terribly, I'm going to back Trump. And then from Trump, I think their team is just thinking, well, it's good because this shows how radical the left is. But is it a true partnership in terms of their ideas? No. And one of my concerns is I wonder if him partnering with RFK Jr., while it does placate a piece of the base, if it abandons another. Because there are people, many people, who just think, I don't want you to placate. I don't want you to make friends. I want a person who's going to be out there saying, we're going isolationist. Okay. I don't care about women marching in the streets, about reproductive. I don't care about any of that. It's all an evil. Here is my stance. And if I'm standing here saying that alone and making no friends, then so be it. And I think really, by the way, that would be a more honest embodiment of America first, right? Just America first. I actually don't care to make friends. I don't care about any of this stuff. I'm going to tell you what is evil and what is not, and that's it.
Since you use the word evil, and I, for years now, I've been being contacted by people who use the word evil. And they talk about this being about good and evil, light and dark, right and wrong. I initially found it very difficult to conceptualize evil. I did. I thought we're getting away from the everyday world here that I've inhabited for all of these decades. We're now moving into terrain into which I have not really previously stepped or explored. But that word comes at me too often now for me to. Well, I certainly won't dismiss it out of hand. Do you feel that we're dealing with actual malevolence, actual evil, that rather than us just being caught in the cogs of a big machine for which we are just, dots on spreadsheets, flashing lights on screens, do you detect evil intent?
Yeah, I don't just feel it. I know it. You know, I've spent time, I've done the research, and it is full unadulterated evil that we are confronting right now. And it's when we're referring to a global elite, a small group of people that have amassed power over almost the entire world, the kind of evil that can control the media and compel the human race into action, knowing that it is going to harm them. The kind of evil that can tell a global lie and get away with it. And not even care that you're harming. And this is really, for me, the litmus test: children. Like, are you so evil? Okay, you created this virus in the lab. I'm convinced they've been creating viruses in labs for a very long time. You release this upon the population. You are able to modify human behavior on the basis of it. You've got grandmothers dying alone. Okay. Can we leave the kids out of it? No, they tried to compel children to get this vaccine. They knew that young people were getting myocarditis. They knew, and they censored that information, and the journalists helped them. So at the top, you have evil. In between there, you have greed, right? So you go, why would a journalist who knows that this, what they're saying is not true, be writing these hit pieces, calling people anti-vax? Well, they're being compelled by greed. We know that Pfizer was sponsoring. I mean, you have CNN say something and then a Pfizer commercial would come out, right? Via advertisements, keeping these people afloat. And most people then, beyond the evil, beyond the greed, you then have a large category of people that are just cowards, right? And their behavior is being modified by the madness of crowds, which is to say, well, I don't want to be the person not wearing a mask. You know, I don't want to be the person that stands out. And I was just like, nope, not happening. It's just not going to happen. And I was strong on that. I mean, I wouldn't even allow people. I'm like, this is my home. If you're going to wear a mask, you can't come over. My children are not going to see people wearing masks. I'm not going to accept this as the new normal. So it's a combination of all of that. But at the top, it's evil.
Because I look on it, what's happening in, or I've been looking on it, what's happening in Ukraine. And I've been paying close attention to it and talking to people about it from the start. And because of the loss of trust that I'd experienced during COVID, I was instantly suspicious about what was happening in Ukraine. It seemed too convenient that they suddenly had this upon which to focus everyone's attention. And by now, and of course, I watched our own, you know, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson as the NATO bag carrier who went out and scuppered the peace deal, which was already, you know, was already on the table, and that has led, well, directly, really, to, well, I was talking to Colonel Douglas MacGregor the other night, and he was quoting a figure of 600,000 Ukrainian dead, and then there's Russian dead on top of that, and. And then I look at what's happening in Gaza, and that the brunt of the suffering there and the most of the dying is women and children, and babies, and that I live in a world that's blithely looking on at both of those sequences of events unfolding, and it's like watching a car crash in slow motion and being unable to do anything to stop it. And you say children and you say evil, and the motivations behind those things, increasingly I find it impossible to deny, but that it's malevolent intent. Mm-hmm.
We installed, after a color revolution, a leader in Ukraine that we could control. That leader was then followed up by another leader who was an actor, which is an actor, Zelensky, and he is still an actor, right? And he's a bad faith actor. What's happening in Ukraine is what has happened in Ukraine before. There's nothing new under the sun. It is a Christian genocide. They are intentionally mass murdering men in an unwinnable war. Christian men being dragged from their homes, thrown into vans against their will. To what end, I am unsure. But what he's doing, I have no question about. It is a genocide of Christian men that's happening. With the full blessing of the mainstream media, their job is to convince the Western world that this is really happening because of big evil Russia and not because they have more Machiavellian plans afoot there. The Gaza situation for me has been, it is shocking for me because of how many men have platforms now. You know, you wonder, how could somebody sit back and allow this? We have X. You're seeing the footage. You're hearing the mothers screaming in pain. You have doctors that are writing pieces telling you that this is an annihilation. I've been in war zones. I went out there, Doctors Without Borders, and I'm telling you this is an intentional annihilation. You have the footage and it looks like Dresden. And you are just going to accept the narrative that the media is telling you that there is just children and women. Everyone's being used as a human shield. What is that? Well, on one end, it's greed. people knowing where their bread is buttered and knowing that if you take a different perspective, you'll lose your job. And on the other hand, it's cowardice. I always see these two things. It's between these two things. I just am going to stay away from that narrative because I've got kids and I've got to feed my children. And I understand that the media is only allowed to have one perspective. I don't know that when you enter the big court, like when you are going to have to account for your life before God, if greed and cowardice are going to cut it when you have to explain why you had a platform and said nothing as you watched women and children and their homes be annihilated.
Do you think, Candace, that is Christianity, you mentioned Christian men in Ukraine, do you think Christianity in particular is in the crosshairs?
Do you think Christianity is
the obstacle?
Yes, and it's always been that way. And the more that I got into real history and got out of my, I deprogrammed myself and recognized that virtually everything that I was told was an intentional partial illustration or an outright lie in terms of learning history. I then began to read books. And the more that I got into actual history, it brought me to faith. And I've realized there's a reason these groups went after the Bible and used to teach the Bible. That was just a mainstream thing that was taught in school. That got taken out of the school system. That was no longer being taught because that is the story of man. And then they wanted to usher in this era of scientism, as C.S. Lewis refers to it as, to replace God with the concept of science, making people think that they come from apes. Everything can be explained by a scientist and trust the experts. And there you had generations not even realizing that they were subjecting themselves to a demonic antichrist narrative where man is placed at the center. We started worshiping man, various men, a form of paganism, really, and minting these people like Dr. Fauci as gods. And the more that I looked into history, I realized that there is a Christian conspiracy, so to speak, where everything they have done has been to divide up the church, to attack the church, and to sell you a different narrative as to why. I mean, I'll take it a step further. Now, when I examine all of these wars that are happening in the Middle East, I am certain that the reason is because they are bombing the oldest. We have been bombing nonstop in the West, the oldest place. I mean, we're talking Syria, Afghanistan, and there are priests speaking out saying they keep bombing all of these old architectures, all of these old churches, all of these things that hold real history. Well, yeah, you got to wipe away history if you're going to plan on presenting an Orwellian future where there is no such thing as history and it's just this ever present. I think that is the reason why they are after in Iraq, in Iran, in, like I said, Syria. Nobody knows what we're doing in Syria, why we've just been bombing Syria into oblivion. And because the history holds the answers to the future.
And so the whole thing, this is what I find, I feel unmoored. I feel as if the lines that held me in place and gave me the security of being able to understand where I was and how I fitted in, I feel as if all of that's been cut away, and that I now find myself having conversations about evil and about faith and about Christianity. I wonder if it isn't the necessary step you to get beneath or behind what you describe as the matrix. Mm. And to get back to some of these fundamental places and look at them again as though for the first time, you know, like Syria and Iraq, you know, these places where deep history is embedded. Mm. And even deeper history closer by. I wonder if that's part of the necessary recovery that we need to get away from this matrix.
Yeah, well, it's one of the reasons why I was baptized Catholic. I think they've been holding a candle for a very long time. It's why Catholics are so hated. And even that was a very careful evil operation to dissuade, and I'm speaking about America, but obviously also in the UK, to dissuade the West against the Catholic Church because they know real history. They've been keeping it for thousands of years. And yes, it has always been a holy war. everything else is just materialistic and surface. You know, what you're being told, it's all surface. And they're intentionally giving you all of this information and no real information. Once you begin to examine world events through the lens of a holy war, things suddenly make a lot more sense. And you will find yourself at the moment that you begin speaking about faith under attack from the mainstream media. What is divided cannot stand.
Who's winning? If it's a holy war, if it's a war of faith, who's got the upper hand?
Goodness always wins in the end. And that is the reality, because truth always wins, defeats a lie. A lie can only win temporarily. That's why they say a lie makes its way around the world before the truth puts its shoes on in the morning. But once the truth is there, it's the truth. It's inexorable. And I think that is what is terrifying the elite, because they have so carefully laid this illusion. Because that's what it is. Everything has, you start to come to terms with, has been one great illusion. And once you become sober to that, you become a threat to the establishment. And which is why I go back to that analogy of the Matrix. Everyone becomes a Neo, and they're able to see through and cut through all of the lies. And when I examine like Agent Smith, that replica, chasing Neo throughout the entire movie, I see that as the mainstream media. Right? Okay, we're going to get you. You can't be doing that. You can't wake up the masses. We need everybody asleep. We need everybody to be plugged into this. This is a threat to our code.
You've been so, I mean, you're so under the cosh, under the gun. I have been for a sustained period of time in terms of censorship, in terms of silence, in terms of these kind of, attacks that are leveled at you. From whence comes the strength and the determination to just look it in the eye?
The Bible, faith, and family. And it's weird how optimistic I am. I always think that it would drive them crazy if they knew how happy I was, despite their never-ending attacks, because I see it falling apart. I know that they're writing this way about me because they're fearful. They see it. They know goodness is awake now. They know the truth is putting its shoes on. And there's only so many articles you can write calling everybody a Nazi apologist and a racist and a homophobe and a transphobe, and it's not landing anymore. And I enjoy that. And I enjoy knowing that what is real can't be threatened. They have no power over me because they don't have real power. They have an illusion of power, and that illusion has worked for a long time. But real power comes from faith, and real power comes from the home.
I find it almost amusing now that I have now collected so many labels, like scout badges. You know, I feel as if I should have them stitched onto my sleeve. You know, I've been anti-vaxxer, COVIDiot, granny killer, anti-masker, Putin apologist, anti-Semite, racist. The whole gamut. I have had the whole lot, and I almost find it laughable that the previous incarnation that I had, you know, when I used to make a soft history documentaries and soft archaeology documentaries, and I now find myself routinely labelled over and over again in these ways. I almost am amused by it, but I hear you. I force myself to be. I don't think I'm optimistic by nature, but I'm married to a woman who is more optimistic than I am, and she pulls me forward. She is irresistible and inexorable in her determination to keep the thing moving forward. So, you know, I'm blessed in that regard. But in the short term, before we get to the sunlit uplands, would you say which slice of civilization would you say is going craziest at the moment? Is it the United States of America? Is it the United Kingdom of Great Britain? Or is it some other, I don't know, European country of your choice?
Well, I would say it's a combination. It's just the West, full stop, because there are no real lines between the people who have control over America and have control over the UK and have control over Australia. But Western society in general is going through something. It's very obvious. And it's seems crazy, and it seems erratic, and it seems chaotic. But this is the natural process of everybody arriving at truth. Like, so I celebrate this moment. I think it's beautiful. we have slight differences, which you and I were speaking about offline, between what's happening in America. So basically the mainstream media apparatus knows that you have to make a different appeal to the English than you have to make an appeal to the American, because we have different characters and different concerns. And so they tweak their message a little bit. But I find that people seem to be awakening all around. Like I was, when there were calls to ban me from Australia, I mean, we're talking real. They are terrified. So terrified. Mom of three, Catholic, get her out of here. I realized, wow, this movement, this truth movement, it has gone mainstream. It's going mainstream, and they know it because they're becoming more dramatic and erratic in how they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle. But the genie's not going back in the bottle. It doesn't work that way.
I already have some trepidation about the way in which the pendulum will swing back, because of how far the pendulum's been pushed in one direction. But already I feel as it's slowing down over on that extreme, other weight is jumping onto it already, and that I'm already trepidatious about the swathe that's going to be cut by that pendulum as it swings back. We don't want to end up at some other, you know, equal and opposite extreme. You know, if you're right, and I believe that you are, I have faith that you are right, it's going to have to be carefully done, isn't it? Otherwise, that if the pendulum goes all the way out to the other extreme, other as yet unthought of consequences will then ensue.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the way that I look at it is what's gone wrong has been this sort of administrative, or almost like an administrative state, so to speak. And that was able to be created by this full reliance on the government, people believing that they're atheists. They have the strongest faith in the world. Atheists have the strongest faith in the world. Whenever there's no such thing as an atheist, they just replace their faith with something else. And I think the way that it swings back is with true faith, and true faith leads you not to believe in administrative faith. You don't believe in that. It's all about what you can do in your own home, right? And so I'm not looking for the opposite administration to be installed. You know, well, we have the CDC, now we have to rely on this. It's like, no, we need to rely on individuals and their families to make the best decisions that they have in their own household. Like, I'm going to homeschool my children. I'm not longer going to give my children to the state. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful solution. I think what can happen is, like you're saying, people just go, well, we're not listening to the NIH and the CDC, so we need to create a different kind of bubble that's the other extremity. And no, I truly do believe in the individual and the family as the best solution.
To get back to, because I think about it more and more, when you talk about Christianity, and we've agreed that it's having been in the crosshairs of attack for a very sustained period of time, it astonishes me that that's the message that comes under such sustained attack. Because, I mean, when you boil it down, the message was only ever to love God and love your neighbour as yourself. It's a strange message to get and it's been corrupted, and it's been misused and misapplied, and there's been all sorts of horrors, you know, resultant from the misapplication and the misuse and the corruption of it. But it's always amazing to me that such a simple message of, we talk about tolerance and all the rest of it, but love your neighbour as yourself, has attracted so much heat and anger over the years, is a great mystery to me.
Well, it's not to me, and not if you have a state which seeks ultimate omnipotence. Everything that the Bible is providing with people is a tool to believe in something that's bigger than the state, right? And they don't want that. They want to be your God in your life. So the first thing you have to attack, and this is the first thing that is attacked when you look backward into history and you look at communist states, they don't want religion. They don't want Christians. They don't want that to happen, because then people have this inner power, which makes it impossible for them to rely on humans. you know, this humanist agenda. I now understand we were completely lied to about everything, including the Enlightenment. The Enlightenment will be, once we get through this thing, known as the Dark Ages. The Dark Ages were actually the Enlightenment. It was a period of remarkable Christian progress. And then they completely inverted that and told us the opposite. And like, no, the Enlightenment, once we started thinking about self and how amazing we are as human beings, there were all of these breakthroughs. No, we've been going downhill since. And so they have needed to attack the Bible. They have needed to make people believe that there is no God, because they wanted to become the gods of people's lives. And you will see that there was nobody who gave more to the government during the time of COVID than the atheists, because they believe this is it, right? I could possibly die if I breathe. I will lock my child in a closet and tell my mom not to even call me if it means that I get to live to see tomorrow. If that's what the newscaster tells me, I'm doing it. It's very scary, right? Whereas people that believe and know that there's more would never subject themselves to that.
And didn't. Mm-hmm. Your faith was the magic bullet that empowered so many people not to take the interventions, not to take the jabs, mm-hmm. for precisely the reason that you just articulated. But in the short term, again, how do we confront the very real threat of the censorship at the moment? You know, the attacks on Telegram, the sustained attack on X/Twitter. And the censorship that's already applied by YouTube for whatever reasons. I mean, that's a hugely censorious platform and organ, even as it is. How do you and I, you know, we're communicating and in touch by this miracle at the moment. How do we make sure we're not atomized one from another by the malevolent forces that we've been talking about for three quarters of an hour? Cutting the ties that bind with their control of the technology.
Right. Well, one of the things that I will say is, and I hate to be the eternal optimist about this, but I do think that everyone's paying attention to what they're doing, right? And the fact that we're having this conversation, the fact that despite everything that's happened to me, you know, my podcast has never been bigger. What does it show you? It's having the opposite desired effect. So at this point, those forces are fighting to lose. They're just fighting to lose because the people are now awake to what they're doing. We don't live in pre-COVID world anymore. That authoritarianism is not going to work. And fortunately, because they were so heavy-handed during that time, people figured out how to get around it. You know, people figured out, okay, if I actually want to hear the truth, I'm going to have to go somewhere else. I'm going to have to get onto this newsletter or get onto this platform, or maybe this person's not on YouTube, so I'm going to have to download their stuff on Spotify, whatever it is. And so it allowed people to predict that could be coming. And so I am optimistic because I've been predicting that at some point YouTube was going to come hammer me. And you know, there were these organized groups of the offshoots of the ADL who were like, let's just start mass reporting her account. Well, because I'm able to foresee that may be a conclusion someday, I'm building my own platform. Once I have more my own platform, I then would like to host other people onto my own platform in the same way that Tucker built his own platform. And that's the way that it's going to be forward. So we're going to have to be innovative. And we were not being innovative before because we were operating under this blind delusion that things were fair and people wanted speech. And now we don't see that. And so we get to have the opportunity to be creative. What a blessing.
Do you put a timeline on any of this, Candace? You know, do you, this better time, these sunlit uplands to which we might return, do you see it? Do you see and have a sense of when we might tip over and get onto the downhill stretch?
I don't know. But I know that we're already in the tilt. That's very obvious. Like I said, based on their theatrical responses to everything and how those responses are no longer landing. And I will give you an example, full on attack on Tucker Carlson for hosting a historian who presented some other facts about World War II. Full on attack. I mean, forget it. Wall to wall. Didn't impact anything. Tucker's at the top of the charts. Actually, it made it so it was like the most watched podcast ever. So I don't know when that exact moment. I think we're already in the tilt. So
It is fascinating the way the tried and trusted techniques are hitting stumbling blocks. I watched that with great interest. I consume most of Tucker's content. The long form podcast, you know, I just find endlessly fascinating. And I saw the Darryl Cooper conversation. And, you know, my reaction to, I mean, I'm not a credentialed historian. I'm an archaeologist, but I'm just a history buff. And I listened to what Darryl Cooper had to say just with open fascination. Mm-hmm. I love it when somebody comes at a familiar topic from a different direction. Mm-hmm. That's never threatened me. I've never felt the urge to cry heretic. Graham Hancock is someone who's reviled by the traditional archaeological community because he has ideas about a lost civilization, the truth of the flood narrative. He has a whole complicated cosmology actually worked out, and the traditional archaeological community come after him with everything they've got, and I've never understood why, because even if he's wrong, what he says is at least fascinating. And likewise with someone like, I listened to the Darryl Cooper piece and I thought, wow, you know, you have definitely gone and consumed a lot of content. You have read a great deal of material, and how fascinating simply to listen to you elucidate your interpretation of it. Mm-hmm. And yet when that world came after him to destroy them both, to tear down both Tucker and Cooper on the strength of it, It didn't happen. It didn't work.
Yeah, because our behavior has been modified by COVID. Now, when people are screaming and doing that song and dance, it makes people go, okay, what truth is in here that I'm not supposed to know? Because you did this already with the anti-vaxxers. You did this. You told me that all these people were crazy, that they were unhinged. You know, you can only say that so many times before people just go, okay, what are they freaking out about? I said that actually the Streisand effect wouldn't have happened if they just left it alone. If they just had let the episode play, it wouldn't have been the most watched Tucker Carlson episode next to the Putin interview. But they can't help themselves, because what we're dealing with are a group of people who aren't creative. They aren't creative. It's always worked for them. We smear, we libel, we call people unhinged. We say they're having a mental breakdown. My favorite is their new thing is Candace is having a postpartum psychosis.
Are you?
Which is, yes, according to the mainstream. It's all the signs, the postpartum psychosis, which I love because I've examined the history of psychology, and quite literally psychology, modern psychology, the father of it being Sigmund Freud, was a horrific pervert who covered for pedophiles and created the art of gaslighting the public, right? And then he passed the torch down to Edward Bernays, who became the father of modern propaganda, who was his relative, his nephew, and it hasn't stopped. So this is all they know. All they know how to do is lie and smear. And so when people catch up to that game, you look at them and you go, okay, well, what's your next move? Like, what are you going to say now? Like, you've already said that thing. You've said they're Hitler. You've said they're a Nazi collaborator. You've said she's in a postpartum psychosis. People are still watching her content. So what's the next move? So the next move becomes banning. You know, we're just going to ban her from a country and pretend she's a criminal. We're going to ban, you know, this person. We're going to try to squeeze in on the economics, I think, is what their next move is. But like I said, people are getting creative. They're getting around it. And so I'm enjoying watching the show. I'm enjoying watching them struggle with something that gave them such great results in the past that is giving them nothing but an echo chamber amongst themselves.
I am presently loving the concept of the staircase of disbelief, which is this idea that everyone has their own staircase of disbelief, effectively. And the most difficult step is the first step. And it'll be different for each person. It might be the JFK assassination, or it might be whatever, or it could be 9/11, or it's something that you absorbed and took on faith from the entity, and you believed it, and then for whatever reason, you take the step onto step one of the staircase of disbelief, and you think. I really don't think that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone shooter and killed, you know, John F. Kennedy for his own reasons. And having internalized one, having stepped on, you're then that bit more likely to step onto step two. Mm-hmm. And everyone's going to find their own step. And if it, and it, and it goes all, you know, and it's 100 steps high. And mm-hmm. I wonder with, for you, you know, I mean, I've seen your content, you know, I've seen your content about Brigitte Macron. I've seen various topics that you've confronted. Where is, for you, what would be the next step on your personal staircase where you think, I took that on faith for all of my life, but now I'm ready to think, do you know what? I think there's an alternative explanation for that. Where are you ready to go next?
I don't know. I mean, for me, I just have the kind of the same process of determining what the lie is. And you typically, when you're seeing an overreaction in the media, that is just name calling. Like, you're not disputing anything. You're just screaming like an authoritarian. That always piques my interest. The Brigitte Macron is a perfect example, like, for that latter, because I thought, this is insane. Of course, there's no truth to this. Like, but I was very kind of put off by the fact that rather than just like disproving that narrative, they were just kind of calling somebody a name. And I was, let me look into this ridiculous story. And then I realized that it was the most well-researched 6-part, took 3.5 years for a journalist to uncover, get documents. I'm going, how dare you pretend that this was like just some random guy on the internet, like Photoshopping? And then when I came to terms with that and realized that no one would touch it, I mean, not even, let's start with this, the small piece, talking about that ladder of disbelief. The one thing they don't deny is that at the very best, you're talking about a case of statutory rape. Okay. Like, at the very best, like, scenario for France, they have to acknowledge that. So they ignore it. They just ignore that part and won't even talk about it. And that makes you go, okay, that's quite sinister that the mainstream media won't at least say, yes, like Brigitte Macron, even if I believe she's a woman, statutorily raped Emmanuel Macron. They won't say it. And so the more that you push, you would think easily, just debunk this. It's such an easy, where are the pictures of you? 30 years of your life. I would love it if someone tried to tell the public that I lived as a man for 30 years. I'd let them write the whole piece. And then you get that other little tidbit where you find out that as they were working on this article, the Secret Service detained them, took their phones. This is just my common sense, street smarts, Candace comes from nothing, doesn't pass the sniff test. Why? Why would you send the Secret Service out on a journalist to intimidate them and detain them? So one of the things that I really say to people, you can describe it as a staircase. Really, I just remind people that you have this thing and it is your God-given intuition that just tells you something's not right here, right? Like, something's not right. This is such an easy thing to debunk. Why are we just calling people names as opposed to just sitting across from them and debunking it because it's crazy and stupid? It actually is. It's so stupid that I would love for you to print that article so I can then show you, you know, 8,000 pictures of my life. And here's me pregnant. And here's my husband. And here's me in high school as a cheerleader. And here's me, like, this is what I would do if someone was like, cancel as a man. I'd be like, please publish it. Please publish it so I can just like go live and just show how completely asinine this is. It's the exact opposite. And so, yeah, I think there is, for me, just a very simple, I guess you just get quicker because I understand the equation of mainstream media. It's a mathematical equation that's hasn't been disrupted of how they deal with something that they want to cover, right, as opposed to something that they want to report on.
It's because of the way in which a story like that has been handled, the way in which it's not really been responded to. It's as though everyone's just waiting for it to go away.
Postpartum psychosis.
It draws attention to there's increasingly one gets a sense that the people at the top of power that we can see, you know, the visible people, the heads of state, the presidents, the prime ministers, they increasingly look like an odd squad. Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at, you know, I listen to people, you know, talk about the reality of the people in Congress in the United States of America. And it sounds as if you'd have to hunt high and low to, you know, to find people that were just living normal family life. Mm-hmm. You know, the Brigitte Macron story, It nudges inquiring minds in the direction of thinking there's a lot of strangeness at this level of society where really a person might be expecting almost paragons of virtue or at the very least people just living regular family lives. But people living regular family lives at that elevated level are few and far between. And our attention's been drawn to it, hasn't it? Mm-hmm.
It has. And I think we're now dealing with the fact that there are a lot of perverts in power. And then you start to ask yourself rationally, like, why would they want to have a pervert in power? Like, why would you want to empower someone? Why would you want to keep this secret? Isn't it easier to just go find a regular guy and have him become president? And the answer is because once you know someone's perversions, you control them. That's the obvious thing. So if we accept that the people that are in power are not actually in power, and now we fully accept that in America, like there's no one in the entire world who legitimately believes that Joe Biden is running the country. There's no one in the world that believes that, right? So then you have to come to terms with someone else is running the country, right? So there was someone else that was running the country for 4 years as this man was in full mental decline. And when you ask that question, then suddenly big, bad, evil Putin sitting across from Tucker Carlson, almost like laughing at Tucker when he asks a question about, like, did you and the president have a conversation? And he's like, I don't deal with the president. I deal with the CIA, right? He's like, this is, what are you, a little boy? I don't care about who your president is. I'm dealing with the CIA. And that's why they didn't want that conversation to happen, because they need people to believe in this illusion that, like, this person that is in power really has power. There's no power. There's a hand behind these people telling them what to do, telling them when to lock down their citizens, telling them what they must do. And they respond to it because typically there is some perverted story. I mean, Joe Biden being another example, the media wouldn't touch. And then the FBI swooped in when Ashley's diaries, his daughter, her diaries were revealed to the public. And she said she had inappropriate showers with her dad when she was a child. Could you imagine if that was Trump and that was Ivanka's diary?
That ought to have been problematic.
That should have been problematic.
That should have been problematic, yeah.
Yes, okay. It's disgusting. So what are the implications here? Same, too, for Hunter Biden's laptop. There was, and I shared this on my Twitter and got my Twitter account locked out because, and this was before Elon Musk was running Twitter, because there was a text chain, which still has not been reported about in the media, from that laptop in which Hunter Biden is in a panic speaking to his parents because his niece is saying, like, that there was incest, that there was some sort of a sexual relationship. No reporting from the public on that. Hunter Biden smoking crack on a laptop, and they all collude to pretend at first that the laptop is Russian disinformation, and the entire intelligence agencies, like, what, 75 of them signed a letter saying it was Russian disinformation at the time. And then they put that family in power with plausible incest and plausible inappropriate, you know, alleged from her own writing about inappropriate showers with her dad that she says sexualized her early on. What does that signal to you? Now, you couple that with the Brigitte Macron story. You couple that with what we know about Barack Obama, which the Daily Mail published, you know, his college letters about his homosexual affairs. And he's admitted that he was on drugs. What's going on here? Why don't we just have, like, a regular person in power?
Which, when I was asking about, you know, where what might be the next step on the staircase, I've, the level, the extent of the child trafficking. Let's just bracket that enormous, appalling thought with child trafficking. Everything that implies. The scale of that that's already apparent, to which the state establishment and mainstream media blind eye is being turned, I find impossible to ignore now. The reality that the trafficking of children on a global scale,
absolutely,
is a,
done
is
by
an
the government,
appalling fact of life, and that it may well underpin everything else we're worried about in terms of abuse of people and abuse of power.
Yes, that is happening on a global scale. You are correct. And so, and this is what I talk about, where then you have the media trying to tell you that Pavel Durov, the reason why they're going after him is because they're concerned about child sex trafficking and drug trafficking, and like the Tate brothers, you know, is because they're worried about human trafficking. This is a joke when weighed against the fact that the biggest drug traffickers, the biggest child sex, human sex traffickers in the entire world are your government. What do you think they're doing in all these wars when these children just go missing? And it's so, like I said, it's such a huge step for people to recognize that And like I said, I'm here to just give them a seed here and a seed there. Like, here is irrefutable proof of this. And don't you find that strange? And I know that inevitably they will arrive at the step that you're talking about where you realize, could it be this sinister? The answer is yes, it is that sinister. Your government is involved in unspeakably evil organizations. Like, I even think half of the ones that we're led to celebrate and to back are operations. Like, I don't even trust when you're donating money to various organizations after a hurricane. I mean, what happened in Haiti after that hurricane where organizations came in and children were trafficked? And I don't know. I know for a fact the government was aware of that. And so I just, you know, it's difficult to grapple with, but like I said, the awakening is upon us. And I think that many people are in fact grappling with these facts today.
I find I don't know what to do with that thought. That's what, because I'm, you know, I'm freely admit I've emerged from, you know, 5 decades of naive trust in authority. Mm. And now 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, whatever, I'm now contemplating global organized trafficking of children, which I can't think of anything that would make a planet, a civilization harder to have faith in ever again. Mm-hmm. If in our lifetimes we've been unaware of, and ignorance is no defense, global trafficking, abuse and murder of the most vulnerable among us, mm-hmm. I don't know what to do with that thought. I don't know where to go with it, because the information is out there, and yet the very organizations that we ought to be able to turn to confront that and do something about it would appear to be the organizations that are driving it. I don't know what to do with that thought.
Well, the first thing you do is that you decide that you're not going to be quiet about it, right? You decide that neither cowardice or greed is going to stop you from sharing that fact, right? And then I think you, once you know that you can contribute that truth to the masses, you also have to develop your spiritual faith. Like, you really do. I'm telling you, because I have such a positive perspective. And I know right when I became Catholic, a priest said to me when I was on a pilgrimage, the thing about being Catholic is you're going to be persecuted over and over and over again, but you're going to be happy. And I know exactly what he means now. I just know exactly what he means, because I have not faced more persecution than when I started speaking out for children, when I started speaking out for basic morality. Like, it's not okay to murder children. It's not okay to sex traffic. It's not okay to support these groups that are trying to convince you that it is okay. And yet I'm happy because I know I have that faith perspective. I know that in the end we win. And right now, even though it doesn't feel like it, we are in the middle of winning. We are in the middle of winning. The panic is a signal that they've lost control. And so I just also want to tell people, like, it's like at first you take the red pill, then you take the black pill, which is like, it's all doom. And like, how are we going to move forward? And then
I think
you
that's
take
where
the
I
white
am. I think I can still taste the black pill.
Mm-hmm. I went through that. That was me, I would say, last year. And then I took the white pill. And I just know how this ends. And I know that we're in the middle of seeing it. And in the end, goodness wins. It's inevitable, because goodness is truth. A lie cannot defeat the truth in a fight.
Where did you get your white pill, so to speak?
Well, my husband, and that was a part of God's plan. You know, my husband is incredibly faithful. He was raised in London, and while he was, I know you guys say reading theology, you read theology, right? We say majoring in theology. He was drawn towards the Catholic faith and converted. And when we got married, he just got very deep into faith. And I was not a Catholic, and I was just kind of like, why is this guy going to church every day? Like, he brought me out of curiosity for a piece of my husband. Like, you know, there was like a mystery happening there that I, like, why are you so compelled? And I then, once I historically and politically realized that it's always been a holy war, then I wanted, I started thinking about how I've always had this perspective of Catholics that was ingrained in me, and that followed that same formula of realizing, well, it's usually the thing that they're insisting on that it's probably the exact opposite. And then I spent some time at the Brompton Oratory with priests, asking every question, playing devil's advocate, like, I guess, advocating for the devil, asking, well, the Catholics are this, everything that you expect, and realized how amazingly rich, how they had kept, like I said, the light on for history, the light on for Christians for a very long time. And I just remember feeling, as I was going every day and spending hours at the Brompton Oratory, a lightness that I was so loath to leave England. I had never felt more clarity, more excitement, like knowing finally why God gave me my platform. Even that to me was a mystery. And I realized this is why I have a platform. Like, this is the big one. And so it's just been an amazing journey. And I owe it to my husband. I owe it to the priests. I owe it to my strong family unit. And I know that in the end, we're going to win. And I'm even injecting you right now with a little bit of the white pill. This is probably your very earliest. And it's going to be tempting. And then you'll be at the Brompton Oratory and you're going to be great.
Candace, that conversation, I never really have a direction in mind, but that definitely meandered and we've ended up at a destination I was not expecting. But that's always special. It's always a treat. So I hope we can continue having conversations, but I feel an hour and several minutes, more than an hour, I've taken up more than enough of your time. Thank you for being so generous with your time, and I will look forward to when we meet again, Candace Owens.
Thank you so much. And don't forget, in the end, we will win. I promise.
I'll hold you to that.